is your injury going?
It's going well, man. Surgery went well. Just kind of letting everything just relax and can't be on my feet for 6 weeks. I mean, you know, get after rehab.
Gosh, so this season.
It
sucks, especially because you're so athletic. You're always wanting to move. Right now, it's probably hard, right? You're stuck in your own head and your own thoughts, and you can't really do much.
Yeah. Honestly, I mean, for me, it's not my first, it's not even a serious. I've had worse injuries that I've had to deal with. So the mental part is not really, it's not tough for me. So it's just more of a, I'm kind of a perfectionist. I'm somebody who likes to finish where they start. So it just sucks that I can't finish the year out and, you know, try to help the team, you know, win the Grey Cup. But I just got to find other ways to kind of, you know, still influence. So, I mean, I try to be a leader still with guys, try to communicate with guys, let them know I'm here if they need help. If the O linemen who are playing, guys playing in my spot, need help preparing for an opponent, I just try to be as helpful as I can.
Nice, man. Yeah. And I saw that you were there at the games. You're right on the sidelines cheering them on. And yeah, that's important, right? Teamwork.
Yeah. For sure, man. For sure, man. Got to be a teammate first, always.
Exactly. So, Derek, for the listeners here, you're from New York, Queens, New York. Mm-hmm. And, you have a pretty awesome journey. And one of them is, obviously, you started playing basketball first.
Yeah. It was my first love.
That's amazing. Do you still play it here and there for hobbies?
I mean, honestly, I was actually talking to somebody about this the other day. I haven't touched the basketball in like 6 years.
Oh.
Because I've just been like so, you know, football. Once I kind of got into my pro career, I stopped, you know, doing extra stuff that, you know, could possibly like get me hurt or anything like that. And especially me, like, I'm a competitor. So if I'm going to play a sport, I'm going to go as hard as I possibly can. So I think I went to go play basketball with a couple buddies back home when I first moved to Arizona. And like, it was like I was in NBA Summer Pro League, and I was like, yeah, I got to calm down on this. So I haven't really played like since, but a lot of my background growing up is I played basketball pretty much my whole life. I didn't start playing football till my junior, senior year of high school.
Damn. Wow. What made you choose football when you were growing up?
Honestly, everybody just kept pressuring me to play. It was like my dad always wanted me to play. I always had teachers, coaches, friends who played football in school. Everybody was like, yo, you should go play. And I used to be like, nah, I'm a basketball player. Like, I used to be real, like my thing is finesse. I think that's why I've been such a good old lineman, is that I've always been a guy who's been light on his feet. A lot of that comes from my background. My mom is what a lot of people, you know, find out is my mom was a dancer growing up. She was actually a really good dancer. She got a scholarship to go to the Juilliard School when she was younger. So growing up, my mom used to make me dance with her. So she would put me in dancing school. I would do ballet. I would do jazz. I would do contemporary, like all that stuff growing up. So that's why I became a big kid that was really light on his feet. And then basketball just kind of became my passion, because in New York City, everybody just plays basketball. Like, no one plays football. No one plays other sports. Basketball is pretty much the only thing that everybody does. And all my cousins play basketball. And a lot of my early idols were like my big cousins who were like really good at ball. So I used to just follow them around. We'd go to the park 8, 9, 10 hours a day, just play basketball all day. So basketball was just kind of the natural thing to do, because everybody just did it. So as I got into high school, people started like, you know, as I got bigger, everybody was like, oh, you should go, you know, play football. You know, I was already kind of established as a basketball star. Everybody thought I should give football a try. And then finally going into my senior year, I basically was like, all right, I'll give it a try. Let's see what it's like. And I didn't know, no rules, no nothing. I was like typical, just get ball, see ball. That's all I knew. If I was on defense, I knew to get the ball. If I was on offense, I knew to just catch the ball, you know. So I played my first two positions in football was tight end and defensive end. And that was, you know, what I played. And I ended up, you know, being just a natural athlete, being really good at it. And things just kind of progressed from there.
It's pretty cool, man. Like, you know, when we look back at our lives, all those little things like dancing, how it applies to today, doesn't it? Like,
yeah.
When you're moving around and you've got to be light on your feet and feet adjustments and coordination, that's not an easy task. I mean, oh, wow. When you look at it, mamas are always the best, and we got to listen to them, don't we?
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, honestly, I tell people all the time, man, I wouldn't be where I am today without my mom. And my mom is pretty much one of the biggest influences in my life. And it kind of came from her, like, always wanting to have someone to, like, kind of push her. So, yeah. You know, when you have parents that come from humble beginnings, they try to find ways to try to fix their shortcomings when it comes to their kids, right? So my mom was like, I always make jokes. My mom was like Joe Jackson. Like, what Joe Jackson was to the Jackson 5, it was like the parent who just saw greatness in their kids and they just kind of pushed them to any means necessary and always try to make me uncomfortable to push my boundaries. And honestly, I mean, if she wasn't that way, who knows where I would be today. So, I mean, my mom has always been my biggest influence in my life.
Oh, yeah. When you look at where you grew up, do you think that played a part in terms of your grind, your competitiveness, where you came from is why you are who you are?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Growing up in New York City is not an easy task. And a lot of my attitude, demeanor, who I am today comes from me growing up in New York and just kind of going through those trials and tribulations of, you know, living in different boroughs and being in, you know, different places and playing sports in different cities and interacting with different people. And like I've come across, like, I always tell people, like, honestly, it sounds cliche, but that moniker of you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere is really true. Like, New York is just so fluttered with talent. It's just so many people and so many talented individuals that you got to find ways to kind of separate yourself. So even playing basketball growing up, it was like everybody played basketball, so you had to find ways to kind of be good. So for me, the way I was able to get on, especially in basketball, and kind of advance and get in certain circles, was I was a big kid who can do a lot of things. I did, like, the, you know, the dirty work. I would get the rebounds. Mm-hmm. I would play defense. You know, if I needed to be a scorer on a team, I could be a scorer, right? So I always try to find ways to, where I was at, whatever was needed to help that team win, that was always me. I was always what I would do. So people would always want to have me around because I was the guy who was willing to do whatever it was to win games. So if I had to score 20 points, I'd score 20 points. If I had to score 2 points but grab 15 rebounds, I'd do that. If I had to guard the best big man on the team and make sure he didn't score and I didn't do nothing else, then I would do that. So I was always like kind of like a chameleon, a guy who was just willing to adapt to my surroundings. I never... Like, you know, a lot of guys' pitfalls is, you know, I feel like with talented individuals, they'll go to a place and they'll try to be one thing and one thing only. It doesn't matter what that place requires or what it needs. They don't deviate from what they think they are, right? And me, I never pigeonhole myself saying, oh, this is what I am. Like, I always try to be versatile and be adaptable to every environment I was in. And I think that's what kind of helped me progress further than a lot of the guys that I grew up with.
Do you think basketball played a part in a pivotal role in what you do today?
It did, actually. The reason I got recruited for football was because one of my AAU coaches, which AAU is kind of like the big thing in the U.S. for amateur sports, and they always have like a lot of tournaments and teams, like, and you could travel outside of like your school season. Okay. So I played for an AAU team, and one of my AAU coaches was a high school football coach at a very prestigious Catholic school in New York City. And they had a nice, like, pipeline of players that they would send to, like, big colleges and stuff like that. So I remember one day I went to practice, and afterwards, it was just after I had just played my first year of football. And he was talking to me one day. He was like, no, Derek, have you ever thought about, like, playing football? And I was like, oh, I actually just did it this past season, like, for, you know, kind of, like, just kicks. Like, just did it for fun. Like, I wasn't really trying to do nothing with it. And he was like, hey, can I see some film? And it just so happened that basketball season, we actually played his high school team as well. And I had a really good game. I think I scored like 25 points and had like 16 rebounds. So what he did was, when I gave him the football film, he took a mashup of the football clips and then also highlights from me from that game when we played them in high school. And he made a highlight tape for me and he sent it to a bunch of schools. And I had no clue he did it. And then the next thing I know, a couple weeks later, I started getting all these football recruitment letters. I was getting Boston College, Penn State, University of Virginia, like all these big like D1 schools started sending me football letters. And I remember my high principal, he called me in the office and he was like, you know, hey, Derek, I need to talk to you. And I'm thinking like, oh, you know, because I was a kid who, you know, I didn't get in trouble, but, you know, I was always like, honestly, I was telling, like, I was the kid who did the bare minimum. I stayed under the radar. But I never did too much and I never did too little. I just did what was asked of me and I just kind of, you know, coasted. And he kind of like brought me in his office and he was like, hey, you know, these came in the mail for you. And for me, like basketball, like I said, basketball was my passion. I wanted to go play college basketball like all of my friends. So when I started seeing all these letters, I'm thinking like, okay, the schools that I want to recruit me for basketball are starting to recruit me. And he goes, no, these are football letters. And I'm like, football? Like who wants to play football? Like, I don't know nothing about football. I've only played 1 year. Like, it's not like something that I'm like entrenched in. So like, I didn't grow up wanting to play college football. So I was like, man, why am I getting football letters? Like where is this coming from? And then I found out, talking to the AU coach, he was like, hey, you know, I put a highlight tape together and I sent it out to you. And then that kind of started the ball rolling from there. And then every day, everybody was just like, you need to start taking football serious. You need to start taking football serious. But I was like, you know, I had hoop dreams. I didn't want to give up on my hoop dreams until pretty much very last minute. And I really didn't decide on like football full bore because going into my last year of high school, I had about 30 Division I offers and they were split. It was like 15 for football. It was like 15 for basketball. I still didn't know like what I wanted to do. I even had schools recruiting me to play both. Like a lot of schools were like, hey, you can come, you can do both. Like schools like one of the bigger schools I would say that wanted me to do both was actually West Point and the Army, you know, Academy. They wanted me to come to West Point and they wanted me to play football and basketball. But the only thing was I had to do the service after I graduated. That's what kind of made me hesitant about that. And then I had like other like mid-major D1 schools who wanted me to play football and basketball. And I was like tussling with the idea for like 2 years. And it wasn't until maybe like a couple months before I finished my senior year that I finally decided like, okay, I'm just gonna go with football and see what happens.
So then you ended up in Temple.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Pennsylvania.
Yeah. So Philadelphia.
Oh yes. And how was that experience?
It was different. It was different. The biggest thing that I liked about Temple was it reminded me of back home because Philly's a big city. It kind of reminded me of being back home in New York. So it was like a comfort there. Like when I went on my visit and just being in the city and being in the surroundings, it just felt like stuff that I grew up in, right? Especially Temple's in North Philadelphia, and North Philadelphia is a really tough neighborhood in Philadelphia. So, I mean, I grew up in tough neighborhoods my whole life. So it just felt natural to me. So
I haven't been to New York yet, but that's definitely on the bucket list. When you go to Queens today, it's not like what it used to be like, or Brooklyn today versus it's like a posh neighborhood, I hear.
Yeah. So a lot of, you know, with gentrification and moving into certain areas, a lot of the areas have now been kind of upgraded and upskilled. Right. And that's just part of now. New York has always been a place where a lot of people who either want to visit or they decide like, hey, I want to move to New York to get, you know, whatever goals and dreams that they have started. Right. It's kind of the same thing with Los Angeles. Like it's like L.A. and New York is always the two places where anybody will migrate to try to make whatever dreams that they have come true. Right. So a lot of the places, yeah, they don't look like what they used to, you know, growing up. But I mean, that's a good thing. In my opinion, it's a double-edged sword. It's a good and bad thing. And that's just, you know, that's part of life though.
So you hear about the Marcy projects and all of those areas. Did you ever walk around those neighborhood and see what it was like?
I mean, I hung out in those places. Like that was, I had friends who lived in Marcy. I got friends from Bed-Stuy, that's Bed-Stuy is the neighborhood that Biggie Smalls is from.
Okay.
That's, you know, my mom actually went to high school with like L. Cool J. No way. You know, people like that. Like, so I've kind of much like I've been around it, like in certain areas. Like that was just normal life to me. Like the stuff that people see on TV that gets like the hoopla and the yes. galore. That was everyday life for me. So it didn't like
you didn't know any different. This is
yeah. It was just what I grew up with. So it's like sometimes for me it's funny because I'll meet people, and as soon as they hear I'm from New York, I always get like the cliche. You know, like the slang from movies or the places that, oh, you ever been to Marcy Projects? You know, yes. like, you ever been to Marcy Projects, son? And it's like, okay, like, I get that you only know that because that's what you hear in songs and stuff. But
Jay-Z
Yeah. I mean, but it's real life, though. That's the good thing is, like,
yeah.
What I always tell people is I'm always a big fan of any art from New York because it is a depiction of the stuff that we grew up with.
You know, I love the art in terms of the murals that they do, especially for Biggie Smalls and just anybody, you know, just massive. And the art scene is just phenomenal out there, isn't it? From acting to dancing to everything. Yeah.
Yeah. On the East Coast, I feel like that's always been like a a big East Coast thing, especially like if you go to any major East Coast city, whether it be DC, Philly, you know, New York, like any of those big cities, you're going to see when you get into like the upper, the downtown areas, the, right. you know, what we call the urban areas, is you're going to see a lot of like art. You're going to see, you know, that's the thing I liked. I always tell people, I joke, I'm like, I grew up in New York and all the stuff that people visit to go do in New York, the touristy stuff, I've never really done it because it was just like stuff that didn't entice me. Like I would do school trips. Like I've been to the Statue of Liberty. I've been to Ellis Island. I've been to the Museum of Natural History. Like I've done this stuff because it was school trips. It's never been something I'm like, wake up and be like, oh, you know what? This weekend I'm going to go to the museum or I'm going to go to the art gallery type of thing. I've been to like Broadway shows, but it was all like school trips and stuff that we did like at school. Right. So I've seen Cats. I've seen Phantom of the Opera. I've seen stuff. I've seen it. I've done it, but it was never stuff that was like, I guess when you grow up in the area, it's not stuff that kind of entices you. I always did the stuff that like locals enjoy. Nobody knew about. Right. And especially me, like playing sports, especially with basketball, New York City has such a rich, like street basketball was like big. So it would always be like summertime tournaments in different neighborhoods and cities and parks. And that was like always the stuff that I did. I was always going towards like the sports and through stuff. And then my dad too, my dad worked in Madison Square Garden for like a number of years. He worked for the trains and Amtrak. So I used to have buddies who worked, he worked under Penn Station. Penn Station is the train station that's directly underneath Madison Square Garden. So I used to always go to the garden to like visit my dad at work, and he would get tickets for us to like go to Knicks games and stuff. So like, you know, I get made fun of because I'm a Knicks fan. I'm a Rangers fan. I grew up a Yankees fan, even though I am from Queens. I did grow up a Yankees fan because my dad's from the Bronx. So it's just like, it's like that type of thing, man. So that was pretty like what it was for me growing up.
When you look at, well, it's pretty funny when you see yourself here now in Calgary and where you grew up. Well, that's a difference, isn't it? Like Calgary versus New York.
Yeah, I always get the people always ask me like, "What's it like being in Canada?" Right? Because it's funny how when you're from different countries, the only thought people have is what they see on TV, right? And especially in the U.S., Canada doesn't get a lot of, you know, per se like love, or you know, when you watch U.S. media, all the jokes, I know Canada is always like kind of like the butt of a joke or something, right? Yes. And I always tell people, it's like, honestly, you got to go up there and experience it to understand it. Like, it's a beautiful country. You get to see a lot of beautiful things. What I always say is the cities are much cleaner. People are much nicer. The food tastes way better. I think you guys actually eat real food up here, as opposed to the junk that they give us in the U.S. So, especially here in Alberta, you know, like, you're getting the first taste of like Alberta beef and stuff like that. Like, it's a whole different, you know, feel to everything. And I always, and that's the beautiful thing that I've always loved about sport, is that it's given me the opportunity to go different places that I probably would have never gotten a chance to go and experience those things, man. So I always say glowing things about Canada. And I always told people, I'm like, man, if my life trajectory was a little different, I would have definitely like moved up here long-term if it was something that was in the cards for me.
What's in the cards? You think you want to move to the States? Go
back. I'm currently living there now. That's kind of like my home base. My home base is actually in Phoenix, Arizona. And I wanted to like live somewhere. And I get to like, especially being in Phoenix, I still get a, you know, that's like where a lot of the snowbirds go, you know, here in Canada. So I still get to bump into people who are like CFL fans. And, you know, you go to a sporting event in Arizona, you're always going to see like a Rough Rider jersey or something like that, you know. Yeah, stuff like that. So, honestly, like, you know, where I'm at, I still kind of get exposed to it. And then, too, being able to play here in Calgary and Phoenix is always a really quick trip. You know, it's easy for my, you know, family to get back and forth to me or for me to get back home. So, I mean, I'm kind of, you know, stable right now in my situation of living back in the States.
Yeah. When you look at, you know, what you've done here, what do you hope for or want to see in the next 5 years for your career, for your life? What do you want?
That's a good question. I mean, honestly, I feel like I'm getting towards the tail end of my career, especially because I'm getting up there in age, and I am, I have a young family. I got three young children that I look forward to being in their lives a lot more in the coming years, especially because, you know, a lot of people don't realize being a football player, being an American football player here in Canada, you know, you do make certain sacrifices with being away from family and missing certain things and to, you know, kind of, you know, fulfill your dreams and all that type of stuff, right? So for the future 5 years, I'm hoping that I did enough in my playing career to be recognized as you know, one of the greats who've had the opportunity to come through this league and be able to, you know, kind of especially be remembered here in Calgary as one of the better players that have come through the program. And then just, you know, look forward to making that transition from being an active player to, you know, hopefully being involved in sport in some capacity, whether it be coaching or training. I actually kind of started my own training company with training old linemen and teaching, you know, kind of imparting all the knowledge that I've had over the years and my success and passing that on to the next generation. I always believe that's something that is big for, you know, for football players to do, right? And I always want to see, you know, I'm a person that loves to see people excel, right? If I can help you kind of do what I did or do it even better or do it, you know, to a higher level degree, stuff like that doesn't bother me. So, I'm looking forward to, you know, possibly being involved in the sport in some way capacity. I am a big media fan. That's what I went to college for. I got my degree in broadcast journalism. So I've always wanted to be involved in media in some way, shape or form.
I was going to ask you that, man, because you're always, you know, posting and you're always doing things that is out of the realm of what I would imagine, you know, an athlete to do, which is great. I'm like, there's something about this guy that just he loves. And you know it, you get it, you understand it. It's not easy. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's the thing. I've always, you know, tried to be really good at. I understand that, especially with media and athletes, that relationship has always kind of had a weird derivative to it. And I've always tried to, like, you know, kind of go over and above, right? So I've always been trying to be one of those athletes who try to take his own narrative into his hands. I never wanted anybody to be able to tell my story. I wanted to be able to tell it myself and get the message out there so that it can be received the way it was meant to be. Because a lot of times athletes are, you know, media will spin stories and do stories about certain people and then guys just don't know how to kind of, you know, be, you know, counteract that or kind of put their own story out and say, hey, okay, this is what the storyline is now, but this is really, you know, what it is from my perspective type of thing, right? And I, you know, a lot of guys are scared to do media because they just don't want to, you know, make themselves look a certain way or say the wrong thing or, you know, whatever the case may be, right? So I've always been big in being involved in media. That's really been like my second, like, true passion outside of playing sport has always been media. Like, I was the kid who grew up wanting to be like, you know, Charles Barkley and Shaq and them once they got on TV and that type of stuff. Like, I idolize those guys as athletes, but I idolize them even more as people with the stuff that they did in the media. So, like, Shaq was a big influence on me in my life. Like, he was my favorite player growing up, and then all the things that he did and how he carried himself. I mean, I always tell people, if you pay attention to the things I do and how I move with the nicknames and all that type of stuff, it's all stuff that I kind of just took from Shaquille O'Neal, because that's what he was. He was kind of like that first athlete that I've seen being that light with, you know, being, you know, Shaq Diesel and then, you know, being, you know, doing Shaq Fu and video games and rapping. And, you know, doing all
restaurants. Yeah.
Yeah, like just doing everything that you don't normally associate with an athlete, right? And the biggest thing that I took from Shaq was just having a persona, right? I always feel like a lot of athletes are scared to have a persona or like carry themselves in a certain demeanor, right? Because they just want to have that, you know, you always get taught to have that cliche, clean cut, try to stay out of trouble, you know, like, and I always wanted to kind of just, you know, I always enjoyed Shaq, and Shaq was always that antithesis to that, right? So that was what I wanted to be. So I kind of took a lot of the things that I do and the way I move from, you know, just watching like Shaq and paying attention to more so what he did off the court than what he did on the court. And I realized, like, in order for you to be able to do those type of things, you got to be really good at your profession for people to, you know, kind of look at you in that light, right? So that's a lot of what I do comes from that.
Where do you get the name Bone Crusher from?
I actually got the nickname in high school, and it was meant to be a joke. So if you remember, there used to be a rapper by the name of Bone Crusher.
Yes.
And he had that song, Never Scared, right? So when that song came out, in high school, I used to have this really big afro, just like him. And I was a big kid. So the kids called me Bone Crusher to make fun of me, like saying I look like the rapper. And then the first day I actually played football, I actually broke a kid's leg. So when I broke the kid's leg, the kids was like, "Oh, you really are the bone crusher." Like, and they just kind of kept calling me that. And it kind of stuck with me when I went to my senior high school, my prep school. That's when the kids started calling me bone crusher. So the high school I went to before that, my nickname was D1. Everybody, like back home in my neighborhood, they called me D1 because they always knew I was going to be a D1 athlete. And my name was Derek. So when the security guards started calling me D1, and then everybody started calling me D1. Now, when I got to my prep school for my senior high school, all the kids started calling me bone crusher. And then when I, you know, hurt somebody the first day, and then it just stuck. And then all of a sudden, like when I would get like team gear, they would put bone crusher on it. And all the kids would just call me bone crusher. And then when I got to college, same thing. Like, I just did the bone crusher thing because I thought it was funny. I was like, cool, I'll run with it. Like, just play around with it. And then when I got to college, I broke somebody's leg again, right? And then everybody started calling me the bone crusher. And then it just kind of stuck with me as I like went along. And when I got to the pros, that was the first thing people noticed was like, oh, his Twitter handle is bone crusher, right? And I was an old lineman. So they just thought it was so cool that an old lineman would call himself bone crusher. And it just kind of stuck with me through the years. And I just kind of wrote it out.
Man, when you look at, you know, what you've done, winning Grey Cups and I mean, being a part of the Miami Dolphins, the NFL for a bit, how did you control your ego? Because that can be something that can take over our minds. You know, despite your physical abilities and everything around you, it's like, holy smokes, like you're playing at the highest levels.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I never like made it bigger than what it was to me. Like, to me, I'm just a guy who just plays a sport really good, right? I don't look at myself like I'm any different than somebody who makes sandwiches for a living or mm-hmm. somebody who, you know, whatever the case may be, right? I feel like everybody has a special talent, special skill to them. Granted, yeah, I'm doing something that not everybody has the ability to do or the opportunity to do, but I don't look at it any different than anybody else. I don't make myself to be anything bigger than just a guy who's just really good at playing a child's game, right? So I try to stay humble. Man, of course, you know, being in this game, you got to have a certain demeanor and an attitude to yourself, and you got to believe that you're the best, and you know, in order to be successful, right? But when it comes to like how I treat people or how I act with people, like I've never been a fan of people who act like they stuff don't stink, right? So I don't like to carry myself like that in that light in the same way. So it's always funny, like people meet me, they always say like, "Yo, you're like one of the coolest people coolest athletes I've ever met." And I'm like, man, at the end of the day, I mean, being a people person and building relationships, regardless of what it is important, right? You can't really do anything in life if people don't like being around you or people don't like working with you, right? So why even carry yourself that way?
Yeah, exactly. Because sometimes we think, oh, it's better to be standoffish or all these things. But like you said, you are the people's person. And I think it has to do when you look at your history, it's like humble beginnings, you know, grateful for where you came from. And what you have today, I think those are important things that people forget. What fascinates me with you, man, is like you're so competitive in your sport, yet there's this gentle side to you, right? Yeah. How do you know how to turn it on and off?
Gentle giant. I mean, I've always been called the gentle giant. Yeah. That was me, like pretty much growing up. I had to learn to be able to, and the gentle nature of me, and that's me naturally. Like that's just the person I am. Like I had to learn how to be able to turn that gentleness off when it comes to playing football and learning how to be, you know, that competitor, that tough guy who goes out there and plays the game with a certain demeanor, but it doesn't carry off the field with me, right? So that was stuff that I learned actually like in college. Like I had to learn how to be, you know, when I walked in, when I put that helmet on, it's kind of what I tell people, bone crusher is my alter ego, right? It's my football alter ego. So when I put that shoulder pads and that helmet on, that's when I become the bone crusher. That's when I'm out there trying to, you know, do what I do and play the game with a certain attitude and demeanor. And I'm out there trying to inflict, pain in the good sense in what I do, right? So that's kind of what having that nickname and kind of turning that into an alter ego, that's what that kind of did for me, right? It gives me a place to know, like, this is the place where I need to be this, and this is the place where I need to be that, right? Off the field, I'm a, you know, I'm a cool guy to hang out with. I'm nice to talk to. I treat everybody with, you know, respect and love. I want everybody to enjoy their time, you know, around me, whether it's been for 5 minutes or 50 years, right? So that's just how I carry myself.
I'm going to have Malcolm on the show. NFTs, that's a new thing that's happening. Well, it's been around for a little bit now, but for most people, they don't understand NFTs. But in the States, man, it's huge. It's a big business. And now more than ever, it's just trying to figure out how to have that access to athletes and celebrities and sports stars. It's going to be a new thing, isn't it? Like,
for sure. Yeah. For sure. Everything is kind of, you know, we're getting into that age where, you know, digital is taking over everything, right? Everything's becoming digital. Everything is, especially with the pandemic, it's kind of pushed that a further along even more. Mm-hmm. With making things accessible without having to physically be present, you know, to make that happen. Yeah, so I think it's definitely something of the future. It's definitely something that's gonna be popular, especially, you know, you saw how with the boom with cryptocurrency, all that, you know, kind of happened. So it's definitely something that's interesting. It's further to get into. It's definitely something that's gonna be on the rise for sure, right? Especially with, you know, we're getting past the days where actually collecting physical trading cards or collecting, you know, physical memorabilia is starting to kind of become more of an arcade dinosaur thing, right? But digital NFTs are going to be the future of what's going to, you know, get. So you see it now, especially too with a lot of NBA, NFL teams, right? Like, they're starting to get NFT partnerships and you know, finding ways to essentially just build the brand, right? Again, too, it's going to be a new way to create currency and build a brand and give more people who may not have access to that stuff access to it.
It's pretty interesting because you're ahead of the curve if you think about it, man. You were building your own brand. You've been working on yourself, you know, controlling the narrative. And now they're saying with the NFTs, you'll be able, or artists and celebrities and sports stars will be able now to control their narrative of how they want to reach people. Financially, it comes directly to the athlete, not, you know, just the organizations to make some money. Yeah.
Right, man. That's honestly the biggest thing. What I always tell guys is, while you have this finite window of being a professional athlete and having access to certain things, you got to take advantage of it as best as you can, right? And whether that's, like I said, building relationships, building your brand, whatever it is that you want to do once you're done playing, you got to start building that stuff while you're still in the game, right? A lot of guys just get so entrenched of all they focus on is just playing a sport, right? And they don't realize, you know, what I learned at an early age is that everything is a business, man. Even when you get to college, especially now with college athletes, with now being able to make money and sign, you know, NIL deals and all that type of stuff, right? Everything is kind of become a business, right? And if you don't carry yourself in that sense of looking at yourself as an enterprise, an entrepreneur, you know, pretty much a brand, and you don't start finding ways to build that, then, you know, all it's going to be is you're going to play football, and then once you're done, now you're going to be stuck trying to figure out what is it that I want to do, right? Or, you know, so I always implore guys to focus, you know, on your whatever it is that you want to do, focus on it while you're playing, right? If you want to paint, if you like painting in your off time, paint, you know. New pictures. Like, if you like, for me, I do podcasts. I do, I know I'm very active on social media, just putting my opinions and stuff out there, right? Because that's the stuff that I want to do once I'm done playing. So why wait until then, you know, do it now. So
could you see yourself creating your own podcast, or hopefully?
I mean, I have a few. The only thing is that I haven't found a way to be consistent with it in that sense of, I got a studio, I got the setup, I got the space, right? So I want to, once I'm done playing and I have a lot more time on my hands to really put a lot of time and energy and effort and find like a specific team, whether it's since be marketing or, you know, finding something. Because honestly, I've kind of built that sense of I'm a player, I'm a guy who, when I say things, people listen, whether I think they are or not. For some reason, whenever I say things or I do things, people gravitate towards, right? So I always try to take advantage of that. Even when I sat out, you know, I sat out last season, 2021, and all I did was just tweet, put out content, talk about it. And people just that's what kind of kept me relevant. People paid attention to what I said, things that I did. And that made me realize even more, like, okay, I have something here. I got to find a way to build on it. So I did a podcast with a buddy of mine. It was called Insights from the Locker Room, where I had like a bunch of different athletes that I knew, especially training in Arizona. I know guys in MLB. I know guys in NBA. I know guys in NFL. You know, I know guys in all, you know, NHL. So I had different athletes come on there and just talk about, you know, what life is like for different athletes in different locker rooms. What are the things you talk about? Because that's a big thing I always liked to kind of showcase for athletes, is that the conversations we have in the locker room and about topics and stuff, right? That's guys' safe space. They talk about certain things in that safe space because they know it's a judgment-free zone. Doesn't matter whether you, what you say is right or wrong or whatever the case may be. We just, you know, we're regular people, right? It's what people use the barbershop for. It's what people use, you know, that type of stuff, right? So I wanted to create a podcast to where guys come on there and just be themselves, talk about stuff, talk about topics, have fun, enjoy themselves, right? Kind of show people a different side of them outside of what they do on the field, right? Mm-hmm. And then I also did another podcast called The Trap. And that was just me with another great Canadian offensive lineman, where we just talked about trench play, right? I always felt like the media doesn't, especially here in Canada, doesn't highlight O-linemen, D-linemen as much as they, you know, kind of should be, right? Especially O-linemen too. I feel like O-linemen were always the unsung heroes, guys who don't get any credit, but when things go bad, we get all the negativity, right? So I always wanted to highlight some of the things that those guys are good at doing in that sense. And then I also did another podcast called, it was another one I did too, but it was like kind of in that same, like just talking. Me, you know, just talking stuff, right? I had a radio show in college. I did a radio show with a classmate of mine in college, and it was like entertainment. So I wasn't even talking about sports. I was just talking about like e-news type stuff. Like,
I love it.
Like, talk about music, stuff like that. So I learned pretty much how to do anything in media. Like, I learned how to be a weatherman. I learned production. I learned I learned like all that stuff. So I just wanted to get that opportunity to start using the things that I learned and putting it into action.
And do they have an agency or something out there for CFL athletes or athletes? Like a branding agency, like start branding yourself, start doing things you did. Do they have stuff out there?
Possibly. I've been in the process of trying to find like a management company or somebody that could like start, you know, helping me get into certain circles and being involved with stuff. So that's been part of my process now, finding something that a managing agency, especially maybe something here in Canada, that could legitimately get me involved into media in some capacity, some way, shape.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, man. And when are you going to be back in Calgary?
I'm still here now.
You are kinda, okay.
Just hanging around, and I finished my surgery a couple of days ago, so kind of, you know, closing up loose ends before I head home to Arizona and get a chance to be with my family.
For sure, bro. Well, hopefully one of these days we can meet in person. It'll be nice. Whether here or in Arizona. I haven't been there yet, so that'll be one day, a goal.
Hey, it's a nice place, especially in the wintertime. It's a nice quick trip. Get you some sunshine, kick it by the pool. I love it there because I grew up in the cold too. You know, growing up in the East Coast of New York, I got tired of dealing with winters, and my parents used to make me shovel the driveway by myself as a kid. So I told myself as an adult, I don't want to live anywhere where I have to shovel snow. So
how long is the flight? 2 hours or 3 hours?
No, 2.5. It's like 2.5.
Oh, that's nothing.
Yeah, it's a quick trip.
Okay, I got to plan that then.
Yeah.
Cool. Sure. Thank you, bro. Appreciate it today.
Thanks, man.